All right. Well, about a week ago, everybody was getting ready for what defensive player we're about to take in the draft with the eighth pick. And yeah, we should all know better right now, right? We should know that was not going to happen. Whatever we thought was going to happen wasn't going to happen. So, yeah, so we're going to talk about the draft tonight. Obviously, Mike not here, as y'all can tell. I got Mr. Will McFadden from Believe in Falcons podcast joining me. And so we're going to get into that and all the reactions to the draft, what we think about the picks, all that good stuff. So let's get at it. And welcome in, folks, to episode 171 of Out of Your Falcon Mind, Atlanta Falcons Fancast. My name is John, your host, joined not by Mike Knight, like I said in the intro, but Mr. Will McFadden. Buddy, how's it going, man?
It's going well. You know, it's crazy to think that the draft was a week ago already, because on the one hand, I still can't make up my mind about how I feel about it, right, which I know we're going to get into. But on the other hand, it feels like we've been talking about it for an eternity. So, yeah, I'm excited again to continue to unpack it, because I need to, frankly. I still need to get it out.
Yeah, exactly. And look, for anybody that's new to the show, man, we appreciate y'all watching. Appreciate you checking in. Hit the like button for us. Hit the subscribe button for us. Help us keep growing on those platforms. And if you're listening to us on any of the podcast platforms, drop us a 5-star review. We would very much appreciate it. And if you're on X watching us, you can comment, and those comments will show up on the chat. So feel free to get in the chat, ask questions, tell us your comments. What do you think about the pick at 8 or any pick that you like? And we'll get to those comments as well. And yeah, man, I know we were on a live stream, which I think you were too, and during the draft last week, and I think it caught everybody off guard, man, because we were just we were all kind of projecting pass rusher, corner, possibly wide receiver, since Rome Odunze was still there. Like, hey, maybe we'll give Kirk some weapons, something like that. And so it came down, funny enough, Aaron Freeman was on with us during that pick. You know, he had to jump off to go, but he was the first one to see it, and his response was, I believe he was like, oh my God, I can't believe they just did that. And I was like, oh shit. What did they just do? Cause I knew he was cool with a wide receiver. I knew he was cool with a defensive player, but so I was like, oh, it had to be QB then, And of course it was. And I think all of us, we were just like, what? Like, we just kind of like shocked, and just kind of, I walked off for a few seconds and then came back. I mean, I had to figure out what just happened here.
Yeah.
And like most folks, I shouldn't say most folks, but I spent the last week, kind of going through it and I've heard their reasoning, and talking. It's funny. I was on with shout out to Kevin Knight, Falcoholic. I was on with them for the third round on Saturday. And, Joe Patrick was on the same time, and Joe was like, he said, in the media room or, Flower Branch, typically after the first round pick, they come in, they're jacked, they're hyped, they just got them. And he said, they came in full on defense mode.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah. And as you got the same vibe.
I did, because I was working for the Falcons for 4 drafts. One of them was the pandemic. So that wasn't, we weren't there in person, but for 3 of them, it was 2017. What was that? That was the Tack McKinley draft. And then the Chris Lindstrom, Caleb McGarry was 2019. But then in between that was Calvin Ridley. And yeah, you're right. Even the Tack draft, I would say that was kind of a little bit out of left field. But Thomas Dimitroff, Dan Quinn came in selling him, right? Talking about what he brings to the table. And of course, Tack going up on stage with the picture of his grandma, that was such a crazy moment in a good way to sell that kind of emotion and attitude that he brings. So yeah, generally a head coach and a GM are going to come in, and it's a moment of celebration. And even if teams don't get the player, even if the person they really wanted and had their heart set on gets sniped the pick before they actually end up taking whoever, and it's their plan B, C, or D, they're going to come in and sell it. and they're going to make it seem like it's the biggest night for the organization, because in a lot of ways it is. Mm-hmm. And it, like, I, again, that's where I'm still trying to, because I had Joe come on Believe in Falcons literally the night of that pick, like 25 minutes after the pick was made. He hopped on standing outside of that media room right before kind of they all came in, and we were going through it. And so I was like, all right, give him hell, Joe, you know, like go figure out what was up with that. But it did seem like they were well aware of the magnitude of this decision and just how wrong-footed it was going to catch some people. And in hindsight, I do wonder how much of that attitude, because we've heard and seen the reports since then that the Falcons were really trying hard to trade back into the first round and go after maybe a high caliber defensive player to kind of get both, like, have your cake and eat it too type of thing, where you get the quarterback for the future and the player you really believe in, if that's indeed like what they actually believe, but you then also get that impact player who in 2024 should help your team immediately and make this playoff push. So the fact that they missed out on that, you know, maybe dampened the mood a little bit, but you're right. It had a defensive air to it, but I wonder how much of that was the actual like player and how much of that was, we just have to defend this thought process because everybody's going to be pissed, because frankly, like it does, it takes balls to kind of do buck what the league thinking is in such a bold fashion.
Yeah, I believe it was it 25 years or something like that since a team has took a player this high, that with the plan of sitting for like a couple of years, basically.
It's
not something that typically happens nowadays, you know, at all. And you know, people talk about Green Bay and stuff like that, but that was in the 20s, you know. It was Jordan Love was in the 20s, and you know, and it, look, and it, if it, you know, obviously Aaron Rodgers won two MVPs after that, so like maybe it pissed him off and he was like, screw it, I'm gonna go out there and, like, you know, he's not taking the field, you know, and that's fine, you know. But that was kind of what we went to then as well. It's like, man, it was like, what has Kirk got to be thinking? Then we find out, you know, that Kirk found out basically when we found out right before, you know, they were on the clock, you know. And and I get that part of it, because like, and I agree with what Raheem said, there's not a good time to tell him. I mean, like, there really isn't. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to tell him a week before, there's no, you don't want to tell him anything. Like, it's just, that's just the business part. Like, that sucks, but it's
there might not be a good time though, but there is a bad time, right? And there's that may not have been the best time. Like, again, I understand given the draft has so many moving pieces, and frankly, like, we saw reports kind of directly in the lead up to the draft that the Falcons were among the teams. And I almost thought that this was like almost like a typo with that. I was trying to figure out, okay, what did they mean by this? But we saw the reports that they were among the teams in the top half of the draft looking to trade up. And I was like, what does that mean? There's no way the Falcons are trying to trade up. Do they mean back? Do they mean like teams trying to trade up or contacting the Falcons? But again, now in hindsight, I think the Falcons really felt that there was a chance a team could jump them to go get Penix, right? We saw the Raiders, the Saints, like other teams reportedly were really high on Penix. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to tell your quarterback that you have now shelled out all of this money for, hey, by the way, we're going to draft your guy in your replacement in this draft, and then it doesn't come to fruition, like, that's not really the best spot to be in either. So I kind of understand that this was, you're between a rock and a hard place, but it just it's not the way I think you would ideally in a perfect world want to go about it.
No, not at all. And it's like, you know, he's a, you know, to be in that position, like, he's probably one of the better guys that could handle it as far as just the type of guy he is, human being that he is. I'm sure he was pissed. I mean, like, you know, the reports came out, he wasn't happy about it, which, I mean, I get that too. You know, if you had no idea, because look, we all heard Kirk come in saying like, I want to retire here. I want to play more than, this may not be my first, he said, this may not be my only contract here. Like, he's, I mean, like, all in, you know. And then all of a sudden, maybe you're not, maybe it's 2 years and you're gone, which we'll get into that in a little bit too. But I mean, you know, I get it. It's kind of like a kind of maybe a reset for him. Kind of like, okay, well, maybe this is not, maybe I need to rent instead of buy it, you know, in Atlanta at this point, you know, like maybe I need to, you know, take it back a step. But you know, like what was your reaction? Like, were you, cause I'm were you like us, just kind of like, what the hell? Like, I mean,
yeah, I think I probably had a similar reaction to Aaron at that point, where I was kind of like, oh, wow, they did that. Oh my God. You know, like, mm-hmm. again, because it's interesting. I like to do, in kind of the lead up to the draft, a final episode where I just get predictions from a bunch of people who cover the Falcons. And one of those was, Aaron was one of them. Josh Kendall, who covers the Falcons for The Athletic, was another. And mm-hmm. one of the questions I asked Josh was, in a draft that is so widely viewed as offense heavy, and like the offensive players, the caliber of that side of the ball is so vastly superior to the defensive side of the ball, at least in the first round, like, should we be shocked if the Falcons, because of their best player available approach, if they just end up taking an offense player? When I posed that question, my mind was Rome Odunze. My mind was maybe an offensive tackle. My mind was like in that realm, certainly not quarterback. But again, I kind of think that thinking could apply. So in the moment, I was definitely like, I thought a trade back was going to be the move. I thought, you know, okay, cool. No defensive player is gone. That's exactly what we expected. It's going to be either Dallas Turner or Leatu Latu, like really just expecting one of those. And then I think I saw it probably on Twitter first, right? Like, I think it actually may have been Zach Klein that I saw tweeting out the report that it was like, they're going to take Michael Penix. And I was like, wow. So it's not even JJ McCarthy. It's not, you know, at Rome Odunze. It's Michael Penix. That's insane to me in the moment, was just kind of what I was thinking as I was processing it. But, you know, again, like, I understand kind of both sides of it. And I think pretty early on, I was able to wrap my head around why the Falcons did what they did. Because again, you know, having been inside of the building, you just understand and learn a little bit about just how teams think and operate. And there is such a risk mitigation mindset at times. And especially after going through what they went through at the end of the Matt Ryan era, it, like, they did not want to have that situation happen again. And so I think that the Kirk Cousins contract was almost secondary to this decision making. I know so many people are kind of connecting the two, and they're right to do so, right? Because ultimately this is about opportunity cost and asset management, and what you're paying Kirk Cousins is money that you cannot then pay for another position, or, you know, three other players or what have you. However, Kirk Cousins is objectively probably the best route for solving the position in 2024 and 2025, and then drafting a quarterback is probably also objectively the best route for 2026, 2027, and beyond. So it's kind of like, I get both moves in a vacuum. It's just, given what we saw with the Kirk Cousins thing, I don't think anybody expected immediately to be following that up with the move for the future. But if this was still Matt Ryan, if we flash back to 2020, and instead of taking AJ Terrell, and let's say they're sitting right here in this spot again, like, they drafted Michael Penix then, it would have been a little bit of a head scratching move, because you would have, again, been passing up the opportunity to, like, improve the team that year. But I think more people would have understood that you need that bridge to the future. It's just because we just signed Kirk Cousins and you're making that move, it was so jarring. So that was kind of my immediate thought on all of it. It was like all rushing through my head at once, but it was definitely a huge shock.
Yeah, same. And, you know, it was like, I think when they signed Kirk, it kind of, myself and I think a lot of people included, were like, oh, okay, they're going in like now. They want to go after this thing in the next 2 or 3 years. So yeah, it was kind of like, okay, so they're probably going to either get somebody to help Kirk. I mean, the offense is already pretty stacked as it is, but, you know, it wouldn't surprise me that, you know, they go out and get an Odunze, or, you know, if a Neighbors was still there, obviously he wasn't, but that wouldn't have shocked me. You know, like you said, even a tackle wouldn't have shocked me if somebody was there, if Alt was still there, if they really liked Latham, that wouldn't have shocked me. So I think that's like that mode of thinking is what everybody was like, what? Wait, like, this isn't going to help us this year. Like, what? Like, you know, like, and that, I think that was kind of like what had everybody just confused. Maybe just didn't like it. And I didn't like it. I still didn't like it the next morning. I woke up and I was like, I don't know. I still don't love it. Like, I was with you. I understood the thought process. But I was like, I just, man, like, you know, then, but then, you know, you look at them, they're weighing, of course, you know, do we think, because in the long term, in the long goal of this, I mean, obviously is to have your franchise quarterback for years to come. And if they truly believe, which clearly they do, because that's, like you said, it's a pretty ballsy move to take him when they took him with the current situation with Kirk. So clearly they believe in him that much. So if that's the case, okay. You know, like I'll you stand on it. That's cool. I can ride with that. But it was just, and the fact, you know, we'll talk about the rest of the draft too, but the fact that they really, really went defensively heavy, which we kind of assumed they might after that, I think helped them out a lot too. Yeah, in fans' eyes. And
I almost thought it was a troll job for a second, you know, like when they just started going, all right, we're going Rook, then we're going Braylon Trice, then we're going Brandon Dorlus. Like at the beginning of day three, when they also took another defensive lineman, I was kind of like, all right, let's do it. Let's just go straight defensive lineman for the rest of the draft. Like, I don't care. Come in here with one quarterback and seven defensive linemen into training camp. I would have applauded because that would have been a masterful troll job just in draft terms. But 100%. Yeah, I mean, I think they did as good a job as they could have done. Would I have loved the pick in the second round to be Cooper DeJean? Sure. But I think it's also notable that 32 teams passed on him. And you know, again, it the league usually tells you what they think about other players, right? And so there were plenty of guys that I liked who didn't go nearly where I thought they would go. And when you saw the defensive ends, right, like start sliding down the board and the first defensive player not going into, what was it, 15? Like
15, yeah.
That's crazy, but that also tells you just how poorly the league thought of this defensive class. So again, you kind of have to connect some of these dots, and that helps inform the rest of the thinking there. But yeah, I like what they did the rest of the draft. You know, again, we can debate the Ruka Roro pick against like Jerzon Newton going the very next pick. To me, again, like usually, and I learned this with the Chris Lindstrom pick, right? He went 14. The Vikings took Garrett Bradbury two picks later. They would have taken Chris Lindstrom if he had been there. So when a lot of people, and myself included, working for the team at the time, called it a reach, and Thomas Dimitroff loved to give me crap about that. And every single time I saw him, he was like, oh yeah, hey, how's that Chris pick going? And I was like, you win.
Yeah, you got it.
But it's again, not necessarily where these players are mocked, because there's two different conversations happening. There's the conversation happening inside of the league, and then there's the conversation happening outside of the league. And all we are privy to is the media mock drafts, kind of the fan conversations, all these YouTube breakdowns, which like I love. I think it's great. I think it promotes the events and is ultimately good for the sport, but it is horrible for managing expectations. And
yeah,
what the teams view and see is ultimately all that matters. And I think they told you what they thought of this class as everything unfolded.
Yep. And I mean, looking at Michael's draft profile, and I mean, I looked at the Draft Network, Pro Football Network, PFF, I mean, you name it. And, you know, they were all fairly consistent with like, yeah, he's QB4-6, somewhere in that range, and maybe even higher if his medicals, you know, were basically, the medicals were the biggest thing that was holding him up from being maybe that, you know, that in that group with the top
three. He would have been a top 10 quarterback, like pre-draft process. We would have been talking about him if the medicals hadn't been such a red flag. Yeah.
Right. And so like, you know, that was basically the consensus, you know, and, but you know, listening to, I think it was Pro Football Focus's podcast as well. And they, you know, he brought up a good point. I think it was Sam actually, who was just on your show. You know, he said, you know, we all had him as a late first, early second. He goes, but clearly the league did not see it that way. And they saw him as a clear first rounder, because he wasn't getting past the Raiders at 13. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so, you know, we did some mocks ourselves, you know, and like, we only did one on the show, which we did buy again. We did get two, by the way. We got Brandon Dorlus and we got Jace McClellan.
Oh, anyway, nice.
Better than I did. Well, that was the only two. I think last year we didn't get anybody. We did the year that Tyler came out. We got him. He was the only one that we got. But yeah, I mean, it was just, it just, it's the most important position on the field. We all know that. So, and clearly what we've seen the last couple of years, you see why it is. I mean, it's, you know, you can't go cheap with a quarterback. You just typically can't. It doesn't work out that much. The odds are definitely not in your favor. And we, Mike and I did a show on quarterbacks probably a year and a half ago. And it was a short sample. We basically sampled the last 10 years as just a sample size. And we went down like every quarterback drafted through 10 years and like where they're at in their career. And outside of, you know, Dak Prescott and Brock Purdy, there's not a whole lot of third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh round, you know, success stories in the league. You know, it's and the same, but just saying that, they can also flop in the first. You can take a guy first round, yeah. They're going to be terrible in the league. So you just don't know how they're going to translate. But if they felt, you know, so strongly about Michael, and they said, you know, leadership was top tier. Obviously, they know he can sling it. He's got a cannon. I think the biggest, when I watched him and reading some of the evaluations, it was kind of similar. It was like, okay, when he gets under pressure, sometimes he's not the cleanest. You know, when he gets off the structure, it kind of, you know, his mechanics kind of fail him sometimes. So, and that, those things are all correctable. They're all fixable. I mean, so that didn't worry me that much. And even with the injury, I was like, you know, he's been clean for a couple of years. And if you're telling me he's not going to play for two more years, that's even more time to really build up that your strength and the muscles and the, around those areas that you hurt. And hopefully that's not going to be an issue going forward, knock on wood. But the stuff like that he can clean up over the next couple of years, great. You know, because I heard the argument was like, well, if he's so good, like, why would you even do the Kirk deal? Just draft him and let him start this year, you know? I think would have had a different feel of us going into this draft without a quarterback. I think we would have been a completely different feel to it.
I completely agree. And that's why, you know, I thought that the decision to sign Kirk Cousins made a lot of sense, even though it was an expensive decision, right? Mm-hmm. Because given how many teams were in this draft looking for a quarterback, it was truly a game of musical chairs. And like, you just can't afford for a team and a roster that feels like it is ready to make a playoff push. And Raheem Morris loves to say, like, when you get into the postseason, anything can happen. So the goal is the playoffs for this team. Like, you don't necessarily sit there and say, like, you know, if you're a Super Bowl caliber roster, but things can happen in the playoffs. Teams can get hot. Players can emerge that you're not expecting. Nobody at this point last year knew that Nate Landman was going to be a player worth anything, right? They didn't even know his name. So guys can emerge. And that is where the goal is. Let's be a team that is competitive, that has a legitimate shot and aspirations to reach the postseason. And things are going to evolve. Players can get hurt on other teams. Like, anything can happen. So that is where I think that you always wanted to control your own fate. And they knew that even though it was going to cost a lot of money, we don't want to be going into the draft knowing that, hey, if we are clearly looking for a quarterback, you don't think that the Raiders would have tried harder? You don't think the Saints would have tried harder to trade up ahead of the Falcons? The fact that this surprised everybody is honestly like commendable because that is what you ultimately want your team to be doing in the draft, is shocking everybody. Because for all of the, you know, on Reddit, everybody throwing out different rumors and every, like, the Falcons are going to draft this guy, or the Falcons are going to, like, guarantee it's, I'm hearing from sources, the Falcons didn't leak a single thing. Like, there was not a hint or a whiff that this was going to be the pick. And that is exactly what you want from the organization. You can criticize the plan. You can criticize the player. Like, I agree with you. There are some flaws in Michael Penix's game where I'm kind of like, all right, you hope that this gets cleaned up. Mm-hmm. They've got a runway to work on that. But my first initial thought was, oh, it's Matthew Stafford. You know, like, his arm talent is comparable to Matthew Stafford's. And even at an advanced age, even at the twilight of his career, everybody around the league is like, Matthew Stafford is among the, like, there's like Aaron Rodgers, there's Patrick Mahomes, and then there's like Matthew Stafford as like the guys who can just spin the ball and put it anywhere at any point in the field. Mm-hmm. And Michael Penix is in that conversation. Out of the entire quarterback class, including Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, everybody is kind of like, the best pure thrower of the football is Michael Penix. So that is a huge ceiling that, again, he is older. He has an injury history. All of that are reasons why you may want to say, well, why are you going to sit him? You know, why? Like, he's got the experience. Why are you bringing him in here? Why is he the right pick? But if you hit on him and if you can develop him, you're getting a player who can be, like, from a pure talent perspective, up there in the top five of the league. And so that is kind of where I think the upshot is for the Falcons in making this selection. And like you said, you hope that the kind of ability under pressure, throwing it over the middle of the field, all of those things can be coached up, because frankly, like, at the college level, a lot of it is point and shoot. We like to talk about that with the Kyle Shanahan offense. Sean McVay is a little bit, I think, less that than Kyle, which is why you needed somebody like Matthew Stafford to come in here, or somebody like Kirk Cousins, you know, to operate it, who has seen a lot of the football. But certainly at the college level, it's like, just throw here. This guy's going to be open right now. Throw it there. So they don't coach up a lot of that, like, pressure, scramble drill, all of that. But you will at the NFL level, and certainly in training camp over the first couple of seasons, he's going to get exposed to a lot of that.
100%. And with the coaching staff we amassed, I mean, we've got like, what, seven quarterbacks coaches, it seems like, on the offensive line. Yeah. We've got so many guys. It's like, I mean, when they amassed that staff, it all seemed like, oh, we're going to draft a QB. Like, it seemed like this is a staff that could really, really, like, you know, nurture and bring a young quarterback up. And then they went and got Kirk, which made it even more confusing. We're like, damn, all right, I guess, you know, I mean, that's fine. But, you know, like, it seemed like they put a lot of guys in there for somebody like Kirk, you know.
Kirk is going to be able to handle his business. He's not going to need Zach Robinson and TJ Yates and these guys, like, to be hands-on with him, which is something, like, Jordan Rodrigue came on the podcast earlier this spring, and one of the things she talked about with Zach Robinson was the Baker Mayfield game when he joined the team, like, Monday, and then had to play that Thursday night game. That was all Zach Robinson, because Sean McVay is usually, because they had Matthew Stafford, who didn't need to, like, have the playbook installed every single week and sit there very closely. Zach Robinson was usually working with the backup quarterbacks and kind of managing them, while Sean McVay was really focused on not just the whole team, but, like, the offensive play calling and installing certain schemes and everything like that. So when Baker Mayfield came in, they didn't change that process. It was just Zach Robinson's job to, like, teach him the playbook, to get him ready, to go through all of those reps, to make sure he was in a good spot. So that is a great sign and indicator of what Zach Robinson can do with, again, you know, he's not a JJ McCarthy young quarterback, but he's a rookie quarterback, and you're going to want somebody who is very comfortable with educating and teaching and getting somebody up to speed. Again, a longer runway than what Baker Mayfield had, but this is a great opportunity, I think, that Michael Penix is walking into.
Yeah, without a doubt. And listening to what Terry said after, I think it was a post press conference about, you know, if Kirk is playing as well as, you know, top level, that, you know, if he's here 4 years, that's a really good problem to have. I don't buy that for a second. Like, I don't think he's going to be here for 4 years with that. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, so if we cut him basically before the 26th season, we would save around $32.5 million. And if we don't, say he plays that season, he's owed, I think, like 57.5, which is insane. You think
a lot of money.
A lot of money. So, I mean, you know, it really looks more like a 2-year deal at this point, you know, and then when Michael's, if assuming he's ready to go, which he should be after 2 years, to step in, then he steps in. Now, what's going to be weird, and it's all hypotheticals, but is if Kirk does take us to the playoffs these next two years, and we do have maybe a deep run, or, you know, I'm not even a Super Bowl, you know, you never know. Like, if that happens, then you may have something going on there, but it's just going to, you know how the fan base is, it's going to take one bad game, one bad throw, and it's going to be like, okay, where's Mike?
Yeah.
You know, like,
again, but again, that's a great problem to have. Like, if Kirk is taking you to the NFC Championship game, I don't think people are going to be talking about Michael Penix that much. No, right? Like, exactly. It'll just be, all right, like, they'll figure it out at some point, but right now the good time is rolling, and maybe he's a trade piece. Like everybody will figure out the thing to talk about in the future, but if they're winning, that solves a lot of problems.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I've, you know, being a fan as long as I have, and I mean, you'll know this too, being obviously covering the team, but also being a fan, it's like, I mean, we can't control any of it. So there's really no need to like, just, I mean, I'm definitely more of a glass half full type of dude. So, you know, I try to look at like, of course I'm gonna have an emotional reaction to whatever. Right. So like when that happened, that pick happened, it's not what we thought. It was out of left field. I was like, man, this sucks. This is ridiculous. What are we doing? You know, then you have time to think about it and you're like, okay. You know, you see the other picks that they made, like, all right, that was good. You know, I can see how this is going to work. And you kind of come around, you know? So I put out a poll on Twitter just to kind of get an idea of like, okay, so like, you know, I've kind of came around on it and I'm down, you know? So I wondered, you know, how's the overall fan base looking? And I just said, you know, are you on board now after, this is after about 4 days, or not at all? Or you were actually like to pick to begin with. You were never even, you know, you were always on board with it. And they got almost 1400 votes. And 48% said yes, they're on board. 36% said hell no. And a 16% said they liked it to begin with. So if you add that liked that to begin with the yes on board,
it's like two-thirds.
That's pretty solid. That's a win for the Falcons.
So, I mean, it was flipped on the night of the draft.
Oh, 100%. Without a doubt. There was like two people like, hey, that's a really good job. But I mean, everybody else was like, what are you doing? But, you know, it makes total sense. And, you know, like, I did, like I said, from a human level, I felt bad for Kirk for a little bit. Then you're like, okay, well, you know, dude's a professional, making a lot of money. He's going to get over it. He's going to go out there and play his game. You know, he shouldn't be, I don't think he's the type of guy to be looking over his shoulder anyway. And there is an aspect, you know, like, as you see all over media now, like, did they create a QB controversy in Atlanta already? And it's like, no, they did not, because they're paying the man like a lot of money to start. Like, he's going to be starting for 2 years, barring injury or that he just falls off a cliff with his performance. Like, he's going to be the starter for 2 years, you know? And I just don't see any other way that shakes out.
That's the big thing, right? Is there's the financial backdrop. Like, the team is not going to, it would literally take Kirk Cousins's play or an injury to force him out of the lineup. Because they have $45 million worth of incentives to keep rolling him out there. That would be the world's most expensive benching if you decided to do that. Again, for it, like, it's not just going to be a couple of bad drives that then forces him out and Michael Penix coming back. However, the issue that I do see when we talk about quarterback controversy, it's not a typical, all right, should this guy be playing over this guy? It's going to be, I think, inside of the locker room. You know, Kirk Cousins is coming in new to this organization. He is looking to build relationships. He's looking to establish himself in a locker room. This is not Aaron Rodgers. This is not Alex Smith. This is a new quarterback who is coming in looking to win over his teammates, build chemistry with his teammates. And now you're bringing in a guy who is the same age as Drake London and Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts. And you don't think they're going to be texting each other, hanging out with each other? Like, Kirk Cousins has a family. He's doing what we're doing. He's got like little kids to feed. He's got daycare. He's got all this other stuff. Whereas it's just natural, right? It's just human nature to kind of gravitate towards people with similar backgrounds. Like, Bijan Robinson and Michael Penix Jr. played probably against each other. They were part of the same All-American classes. Like, all of these different connections that, they grew up watching Kirk Cousins play, but he's going to be a little bit of the old man in the locker room. It's just going to be a little bit of a weird dynamic. And so that is on the one hand, I kind of get where if you are Kirk Cousins, you're like, man, like, you just made my job like that much harder, where I'm trying to go to the Hawks game with Drake London and Bijan Robinson and watch Trey Young play and build up that chemistry. And they're texting Michael Penix the whole time, you know, like, that's going to be weird. So I totally get that. But, and also, like, he may not be ready for the start of camp, right? Like, so it's the minute that they get out there with Michael Penix and they're just kind of, again, building that chemistry on the field, it's going to be a little bit of an uphill battle, I think, for Kirk Cousins, just from a culture standpoint. But the organization has, again, $45 million worth of incentives to roll him out there every single week as your starter.
Yeah. And I think Kirk will, I think he'll actually probably include Michael in a lot of that stuff anyway, just trying to like make him part of it. Cause I mean, and I think that makes sense. I mean, from everything we know about Kirk, it seems like he would do something like that anyway. But I mean, you know, for as far as him the rookie contract for a quarterback has come up too. It's like, well, aren't you screwing that up? You know, aren't they going to just mess up? You know, you're wasting 2 years of that whole thing as well. And again, that's, I mean, yes, I mean, it sucks, but like, again, how often does a quarterback step in and hit the ground? Like CJ Stroud's not the norm, you know, like it doesn't happen every year. It doesn't happen remotely even close to every year, you know? So, I mean, you may have that young rookie contract like we had, like the Bears have with Justin Fields, but Justin Fields is no longer a Bear anymore, you know? And the same, who knows? Like, it's that there's, to me, it's a greater risk to not do it now looking back at it. Like, man, because if we're here, if we're sitting here 3 years from now and we have made the playoffs 2 years in a row and we're drafting in the 20s, now you're giving up more draft capital to possibly move up to take a quarterback, you know, at that point. So it's kind of a, which direction do you want to go in?
It's multiple assets, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just, you know, again, you look at it that way. It's like, okay, this, you know, again, this makes some sense. You never can tell. I mean, Penix could be a complete bust. And if he is, this will look like a completely ridiculous move. They never should have made it. Or he'll be a, you know, a franchise quarterback for 10 plus years. And, you know, they'll look like geniuses, you know, and hopefully that's the case. You know, and looking at, like, I don't pay too much attention to draft grades, especially right after the draft, because they're all based on projections. They don't matter. I mean, if you're going to draft something, if you're going to grade something, go grade like 2020 or 21, you know, 3 to 5 years in the league, then you can start grading. Okay, how are those drafts? You know, because again, like you said earlier, nobody saw Lamon coming. There could be guys in this draft that we picked that show out next year that we know, like JD Bertrand, which we'll, you know, get to. We drafted, you know, for Notre Dame. I mean, he make him be a baller on the field. We don't know. Like, there's no way of knowing. Is that they have to get on the field. So, like, for folks to freak out about everything or just in general, like, y'all just need to chill because it's going to be fine. Like, it's just thinks positively, smile, enjoy. Like, going to be because you know, like, you know, again, if you think with the Falcons, if you think they're going to do one thing, typically it's not that. It's going to be the other opposite. And at least that's how it's been with me. I don't think I've predicted a first round draft pick correctly in like 20 years. So it's been a bit. But enough of Michael Penix. And before we get on to everybody else, man, let's say what's up the chat. Mean Rab Machine, what's going on, man? Christopher said we don't need Kirk because he plays too much. I've heard Kirk complain other than just he was mad about the pick, which is fine. Hopefully, what's up, buddy? After time to process everything, I think I love our draft. See, that's the thing. Once you think about it for a while, it's like, okay. Crispy said, all I'm saying is if Penix is who they say is, I don't mind the pick. You can't place a value on potential top 10 franchise QB unless you already have one in the house, which we don't. Yeah, correct. And Daryl said, pundits hated the Patrick Mahomes move too. Everyone thought it was dumb except the Chiefs GM 3 Super Bowls later. Yeah, that would be, man, yeah, that would be amazing if he could bring a Super Bowl to us. Hopefully it's a 2025 draft supposed to be QB week. Plus, if we win with Kirk, we would pick late. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, exactly right. Inner Machine said, can someone please answer how easy is it to trade back? I hear every draft we should trade back, but you just rarely ever see it happen with any teams. Will?
Yeah, it's cliche, but it takes two to tango, right? And yeah. I think knowing what we now know, the Falcons weren't trying to trade back. They were trying to trade back up. They were trying to trade back into the first round. But, I mean, the Joe Douglas kind of soundbite that was making the rounds over the last couple of days, it was clear that the Falcons were going to stick at 8 and make that pick, if not move up ahead, because again, it seems like they just really wanted Michael Penix, and their plan maybe was, okay, like we'll make that pick and then we'll come back up and get that defensive guy. And if they really felt like they were like, they've got a roster that is in a good spot. And if anything, this draft is like a real endorsement of what this new staff thinks of this roster, which again, I don't know if I feel that way, right, but that's kind of what they're telling you they feel. Mm-hmm. Then they were like, we want to get the quarterback right, but then we want to, even at the expense of maybe a pick next year, which we don't know how the investigation is going to turn out. They may lose a couple picks next year. Who knows? But even if it's two day two picks, all three of our day two picks, what have you, they felt like another kind of blue chip piece could have put them over the top. So that is where I think their mindset more was, but the trading back part, again, it's very contingent on how the draft is unfolding, because a lot of times teams will want to trade up in front of another team to take the player that they feel could have been taken by that team in front of them and kind of almost do damage to that team Or again, like, it's just that player's not going to make it to us. So we need to find a team that we have a relationship with, our general managers, you know, are comfortable and familiar and do a deal. And maybe it's not going to necessarily hurt the team trading back or trading up. Like, sometimes it'll, yeah, you benefit and you trade multiple assets and that benefits the team moving back. But sometimes it's also about like, hey, the guy that we're targeting, he's not going to be there, or he is going to be there, and the value is not right for us to pick him right here. So yeah, sure, we'll move back. It's all well and good. Like, that's why you see sometimes the Chiefs and the Bills like make those trades, right? Even though it seems like they're arch enemies, like, that's fine. We're both going to get our guy. We'll battle it out on the field. Yeah, it's not as easy as everybody makes it out to be, because you're only looking at it from your one side, and it does take the real life negotiation. And it's also not, you know, draft day, right? We're not all just sitting here being like, and give me all of my first round picks back. Like, right. That doesn't happen. Both sides are looking to come out with a win. It's why you don't see that many trades in like fantasy football. That's actually like the most real version of this. It's like everybody's looking for, you get the one guy who's just, yeah, I'll trade you everybody, like this backup who's going to average like 6 points a week for Devon Achane. Like, I'm just going to throw that trade out there and like, let's hope that they accept it. You get that guy who's just pitching stuff for all your best players. That's never going to work out. But in our minds, come draft time, we all just think that's going to how it's going to go for your favorite team. So it's hard to do, which is why I don't think you saw a lot of trades like in the first round this year. You see them a lot later on, because I think the stakes are a lot lower at that point.
Oh yeah, you're not giving up near as much either. It's definitely more doable. And that person in fantasy is definitely my son. He tries to get every good player with like crappy deal. I'm like, dude, nobody's gonna do that. Like, you're not gonna, you know,
I think the trade I made it in two separate leagues, and I was on the flip side of both of these trades. It was oh my god, why am I just Joe Mixon for Cook. Why am I blanking on his first name? James Cook.
Oh, James Cook, yeah.
No, that's not James.
The other, his brother?
Dalvin Cook.
Dalvin Cook. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was James Cook. Yeah, it was James Cook. Sorry, I'm totally having a brain fart here. Sorry about that. It was Joe Mixon and James Cook. Just on, I flipped it on both. And it's like, ultimately, they probably netted out like 2 points differently. And I stressed out about both of those trades so much, because I was just like, oh, am I an idiot for doing that? But again, they're the same exact player. And that's probably, again, a great example of like how teams look at this, where it's like, it's not really going to be a huge win. We're not getting a huge coup on this other team.
Right.
It's ultimately going to net out probably evenly for both teams in the end.
Yeah. And every GM wants to feel like they won it. They want to feel like, oh, I definitely won that one. You know,
they'll pitch like, it like they want it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Hey, what's up, man? Wallace, what's going on, buddy? Good to see you, dude. Bison said, if he really starts at 26 and gets a 6 to 8 years, I'm all for it. Yeah, and look, QBs, they take care of their bodies, man. They're going late into their 30s, you know, and like Stafford's a perfect example. Like, that arm really hasn't slowed down that much since he got in the league. He can still sling it just fine. So, I mean, they're also not worried about his injury history. The league is set up to protect the QB, and he is a pocket QB. Think about the career Nick Chubb has had. If he had a major knee injury at UGA, done well in the NFL. Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and ACLs are not nearly what they used to be. It sucks he had it twice in the same knee, but, you know, it's definitely not. And again, he's got time to really work on it, build it back up, so it's not going to be terrible. He also said, also, Kirk is going to be coach on the field. He's going to help this rookie OC implement a new offense to the team. And yeah, exactly, to the team in a way that the rookie QB would not be able to. And I think we've seen that, you know, no shot to Dez or Taylor or anything like that, but this is a different presence with Kirk. And, you know, if you listen to Chris Lindstrom and Jesse Bates this week speak to the media, I mean, it's just a different feel. He's instant leader on the field, everything. That's kind of what you expect from him. But you know, Will and I, last time we were together on a show was August 31st of last year with Dave. And we were talking about, you know, Art and Dez and how well they were going to do, and how they just needed to be, you know, just average, and we were going to go to the playoffs. So, you know, we don't know what we're talking about either. So it's just, you know,
we were glass half full back then too.
Absolutely. So we still are. Yeah, exactly. One time, what's going on, Jack? Good to see you, buddy. So smash that like button. Yeah, man. Appreciate you, buddy. Hopefully, so win a Super Bowl with Kirk, win one with next year with Penix. So that'd be, I don't care who's Super Bowl, period. I don't care who's the quarterback. I just want a Super Bowl.
I'll take one of those too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So, Oh, wait. Sorry, I got to draw. So that's Atlanta and QB Controversy. Those guys probably hang out together, but as pros, they are going to look at it.
I'm glad you shared this one because I do agree. I agree. But again, I'm just giving you the kind of only aspect of this that I do think will matter inside of the locker room. But you're right. At the end of the day, like QB1 is QB1. That's when they line up, that's who they're going to be looking towards. And if Kirk Cousins is spinning the ball and putting it right on Drake London, like it doesn't matter that he's playing basketball with, you know, Michael Penix kind of in the locker room. Like that is so besides the point. It's a good thing they're going to develop that chemistry, but you're right. Like at the end of the day, if that is your starting quarterback, like that's ultimately what is going to matter. And the play on the field is what is going to be the selling point for Kirk Cousins. And I love that you pushed back on that. Again, I stand by what I said, but I totally think you're right that the performance and the leadership that Kirk Cousins brings should not be discounted.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the personality wise, like I said, there's probably no better guy to handle it because he's going to be Kirk, you know, whether it's.
Yeah. Very regardless. Matt Ryan, very Matthew exactly. Stafford, like Alex Smith, all of those. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. So I don't think it's going to be an issue. So with the second pick with Rook, when they traded up, I was at the baseball field. I looked down, I saw Twitter at a thing came up, said, you know, Falcons trading up. I was like, oh shit, we're trading up. Awesome. And then it was Rook, and I just shut my phone off. I was like, okay, I don't even care anymore. I'm not going to pay attention the rest of the day. Cause I assumed it was probably, you know, Johnny Newton or, you know, maybe there was a corner they were moving up for that they really wanted to make sure they got. And I'd watched some of Rook, not a lot of Rook. Then you go back and look at his, I guess, measurables, and clearly they like guys with length a lot.
Yep.
Cause he, and that's, and JR said it on Pound for Pound this week, you know, looks like they're basically betting on a traits with him because he's got elite traits, not necessarily the production that you would want to see from him at the college level, but somebody that's not even yet played their best football yet. And somebody that can be coached up by Jay Rogers, by, you know, Jimmy Clark and, Grady and Onyemata and those guys, it's great, you know, great people to be around. They're just kind of like Calais did last year with Harrison, you know? So, I like the player. They did say they were worried about a run on D tackles, which there was, but after that pick, it was like 3 or 4 D tackles came off the board. So that was fairly justified. I guess that probably, you know, then they were sold on Rook. So, you know, go up and get him. So again, hindsight, you know, has time to think about it. Don't mind it. I didn't mind the player at all. I thought I like him. You know, I don't know how much of an instant impact he'll be this year. But if he's disrupting stuff in the middle, and again, a very versatile guy, can play inside, can play outside. And that's what kind of with all three of the guys. I mean, like, I guess Braylon Trice with the third round pick, more of an edge than an interior guy, which was good because obviously we needed, you know, that work there. And then Brandon Dorlus, right after that, who's probably one of my favorite picks. I mean, literally played from the 2 technique to the 7 technique and been successful pretty much at all of them. And looking at their pressure numbers over the last couple of years, you may have seen this, Will, but basically most pressures by an edge in 23 was Braylon Trice with 81. And most pressures by a D tackle since 21 was Brandon Dorlus with 134. So pretty nice to have.
I think Braylon Trice had 150 pressures over the last 2 seasons.
That's insane. Like,
that's wild.
Yeah, that is insane. And so I think they want a lot of people back with those 3 picks, whether you like the move up. That was the only really negative thing I heard was like, did you have to move up? And I thought the same thing. Like, did you have to like give up the third to move up?
Sure. Yeah. But you know. Again, that's kind of where I'm coming back to the like there's the league draft board and then there's the public draft board and mock drafts and everything like that. And that's not even to say that somebody that Washington was going to take Rook next, because I actually think for Dan Quinn's scheme, Jerzon Newton is a much better fit. However, the key thing that if you go back and listen to Terry Fontenot's press conference, Tuesday of the week of the draft, what he said was best player available ... for us. Yeah. And that is the Rook Roro pick, is the for us, because the scheme that I expect Atlanta to install here is not really a one gap scheme where Johnny Newton would have been amazing in. And yeah, that's the Grady Jarrett classic. Just like, all right, cool. Swim move, boom, knife, and go right into the backfield. And it's not the 2 gap scheme. that kind of Dean Pease ran here, where you're getting the big bodies and you're really just kind of clogging up that middle, and they've got to be able to kind of press and extend and control that. It's a gap and a half where you need to have a little bit of both, right? You need to have the guy who can kind of get that half man advantage and then press it and make them pay and really push the pocket, but also has the ability to control and defend against the run and play with help, but really defend the run so that you can focus your scheme and your coverage to defend the pass. And so that's kind of where, when you look at both Brandon Dorlus and Ruka Roro, like, that is to me what those guys are to a T. And you're right. Like, I don't think Rook's best play came at the college level, but when you look at what he brings, that length, that power, like I tweeted out a clip against North Carolina, it's just like he's ragdolling their center. Yeah. And I know North Carolina's offensive line is not anything to write home about, but when you see that, you can't just, you can't but help like imagine what he's going to do with more refined technique, more, you know, better coaching and just a better understanding. And again, better players around him. So that's kind of what this was to me, is this guy we envision very clearly in our defensive scheme, and we're placing the onus on our coaching staff to get him up to speed so that we can kind of bring that vision to life. But he's not going to have to do so right away. You do still have Grady Jarre, you do still have David Onyemata, and those are two great, great players to really learn from in a hands-on approach. And then again, Brandon Dorlus is going to be part of that rotation, and he's a little bit of that Leatu Latu type of, I can play all over your defensive line, and that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Heck yeah, and I think we all saw last year with Harrison near the end of the season. He started playing a lot better those last three or four games.
Yep.
Me too. And I mean, and it was, you just saw a different guy. And that's, you know, again, credit to the coaches, credit to Calais, who I know took him under his wing last year and really helped him out too. So you could see a similar path like that for Rook this year, you know, getting in there. Like you said, like just power, like reminds you a little bit of Onyemata, to be honest. Like you watch him just like throwing guys like heavy, heavy hands and just tons of power.
The player he was comped to, I think Lance Zierlein on NFL.com, was Justin Matabuike.
Like that all day.
Right? Would I.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, without a doubt. And then nobody's complaining about moving up to get him at that point.
No.
Braylon Trice was probably, I think that was kind of the universal, everybody was happy pick. Was like, all right, damn, we can roll with Braylon. And then, of course, everybody, I think, really liked Brandon Dorlus too. We got to J.D. Bertrand. I like that pick too.
I do too. He's my favorite pick, I think, of the draft.
That dude is his dad was a rugby player, you know, tough guy, obviously from here, went to Blessed Trinity here in Atlanta. You know, well, I think he was committed to, or I don't know if he was committed to Georgia, but I think he was planning on going to Georgia, ended up going to Notre Dame. But hell of a tackler, smart kid, hangs out with Luke Kuechly, and like, they're all like Luke Kuechly and, the dude from the Cowboys. I'm blanking on his name right now.
Not Leighton Vander Esch, but the one before, Sean Lee.
Sean Lee, yeah, Sean Lee.
And James Laurinaitis, I believe.
Yeah, they all hang out and like are on this group kind of text.
Yeah, it's like tight end U, but like Falcons rookie linebacker right. text chain. Yeah,
yeah,
The group meet, so, right.
But I mean, you know, just around a lot of good dudes. To come into a linebacking core with the guys that we have, I think it'll be a great fit. And two, with the special teams this year, with the kickoffs, I mean, like that's going to be important as well. So, I mean,
I see a lot of Caden Ellis in his game.
That's fair.
It's got to, like, he's got such a nose for the ball, which, I mean, I almost feel like that's a wash to even say about like a linebacker. Who's not going to say that about a linebacker? Right. But it's just the instinct to like, he sees it and he wastes no time going after it, whether he's right or wrong. And again, I would rather, and any coach would tell you, like, they'd rather have somebody who's going to go 100 miles an hour and then you just line them up and make sure that they're pointed in the right direction. But that is what he did at a very high level at Notre Dame. And again, a team captain, like, he clearly has the drive if he's already reaching out to like the best linebackers of kind of their respective eras. That's awesome to see. I really think that the J.D. Bertrand pick has a chance to be like a really good long-term pick for the Falcons.
Yeah, I'm with you. And then after J.D., Jace McClellan, again, which we did get right on our mock draft. And that was the only reason.
You need to be scouting running backs, man, between him and Tyler all year. That's great.
Dude, I talked up Tyler, and once we drafted him, I had to just keep posting the video. Cause I did basically a running back just show. And I was like, yeah, Tyler's my guy. They should get, and here's the reasons why. And they did. So anyway, Jace, obviously being an Alabama fan, I've seen Jace play there the entire time he was there, liked him anyway. So, and the reason we picked him was, we only had two running backs really. It was really, Tyler and then Bijan, and you want to have a guy in case one of those guys, God forbid, goes down with an injury, that can step in and kind of do what kind of similar to what they do. It's not like, you need a small guy and a big guy anymore. Like there's guys that are doing everything now. And then Jace is kind of that guy. I mean, he can run through gaps. He can run outside, and this is his own scheme. He can catch the ball. He's a hell of a pass blocker.
Do this at Alabama, but you mentioned the kickoff rules changing. The way that it's going to be set up now, it's way more like rugby, frankly. I know we talked about that with JD Bertrand's dad, but it's like, that's what I played at UGA is like if you hit the line right, there's just one line of defense now. I know at teams will figure out ways to probably stagger and stuff, but it's not weaving through traffic like it used to be. So you don't need these Isaiah McKenzie, joystick type of players. Right. You're going to Tevin Coleman. I would have lined him up back there all day long, just one cut and go running back. And so maybe that's your Jace. He can kind of, I wouldn't be shocked at all if when they open up training camp, they've got him back there as one of the six guys who are kind of just returning kickoffs. Even though, again, he didn't do that in college, you could envision that here, given the changes to the rules.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you knew they were going to address running back one way or the other, whether it was through the draft or through undrafted free agent or something like that. So I was fine with that. And then the last two picks, Casey Washington, which if you're getting upset over sixth, seventh round picks, then you really got to just really got to chill, seek some help or something. I mean, if they stay in the league, if they just hang on, then that's a win at that point. I didn't know a lot about Casey, but I mean, maybe a long shot to make it. I don't really know. Do you have anything on that pick?
I don't know. I haven't gotten around to my Casey Washington tape. Just looking at the comment, sleeper pick. True possession receiver. Love it. I think it's depth upside, right? But kind of fits, I think, the mold of the class is these hardworking players, just based on what I've read about him. I am excited to kind of dig into him a little bit more.
Yeah. And then Zion Logue from UGA, obviously the big, big interior, I would imagine one tech over the nose type of tackle guy. We've already got 75 guys there on the line. So, if he can stick, then.
Well, he's not going to be intimidated at all walking in the first day of camp. Right. And that's what I really like that the Falcons have done recently in these drafts, whether it's Justin Schaefer or John Fitzpatrick or, even Marco Helms, these guys who come from big SEC schools. Jace is another great example where every practice is very intense. It matters because every game, if you lose a game until they expand the playoffs, it is do or die. So the pressure is always on these guys. And Zion Logue has been a part of one of the best programs in college football over the last 5-6 years. And he is going to be totally calm, at peace, not stressed out. I don't want to speak for him, but I could just imagine that type of mindset and makeup is very attractive to a team when you're like, all right, let me get the best out of you in training camp. He's not going to have a big adjustment period because he has been going at it and battling against the best of the best throughout his entire college career. So I like that the Falcons have kind of leaned towards those guys on day three. And, it's worked out for them to some degree.
Yeah, and to be fair, he actually got a decent amount of pressures from that D tackle position too. As big as he is, he can push the pocket around. He's no slouch at all. So I mean, you never know. These guys could turn out to be they could be studs, or like you said, they could be out of the league in a few years. I mean, you never know. We'll jump into chat real quick again before we get out of here. One time said Country's live, A1 is live, Bird Gang is live, and Audi Falcons. I'm about to go live one time. Falcons. Hey, you got tomorrow morning. So make sure y'all check out one time tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. it's Friday. Yeah, for their breakfast show. It's always a good show on Friday mornings. T. Walker said, still a rookie versus a vet with experience. The players not going to back Penix the first year. I don't think that's really what we're saying. It's not like there's going to be a civil war or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's just natural. It's not saying like they're going to be like, oh, screw Kirk. You know, like that's not it at all. It's just like they just may have a better relationship with guys that's at their own age, and that's it. And I don't think it's going to affect the play at all. You know,
it was just like if there's a negative from Kirk Cousins' perspective, it makes his job slightly harder. Because now you're having to, like, if you're trying to date a girl, right, and you're trying to make a move, and like all of a sudden now, like another dude is joining the action who's like all maybe has a few more things in common with her. You're just like, now I got to deal with this. Like that's a little bit of kind of I think the mindset, but I don't expect that to impact anything on the field. I don't expect once Kirk Cousins has command of the huddle, is throwing the balls around, scoring touchdowns, like he has done excellent work at a variety of different teams with a bunch of different wide receivers. He clearly can build this chemistry and get things going in the right direction. So I again, totally agree. Just bringing up the one aspect that could actually be when we bring up quarterback controversy, that's the only thing that I could see being like a weird little wrinkle inside of the locker room.
Yeah, it's like it's any leadership position, even in any job. Like if you've got two managers, you know, and one's older and one's younger, and like one can relate with all the younger crowd. It's just that's all it is, you know. It's like, and depending on how that older manager is, if he's a dick and he doesn't,
you go to the younger manager to be like, "What's up with that?" Yeah,
exactly.
Like kind of right. It's behind closed doors. Yeah, hey, you can talk to me, dude. Yeah,
yeah. Don't worry about him. Like, screw him. You know, whatever. Like, you show up to work when you have to work, but you know, you can come to me. That's not going to be Kirk. We don't think that's how Kirk is. Like, and at all, because I think it. You know, in that scenario, like, you know, if the older manager is cool and like and he understands that, like, hey, y'all do your thing, man. You know, I'm going to go home and read to my kids tonight. You know, y'all go out, do what you, as long as you show up tomorrow and, you know, and give me 100%, we're good. You know, and I think that's going to be what, you know, makes more sense for Kirk anyway. So, yeah, we're not saying there's going to be some, like I said, huge division at all. I think it's far from it. Dave said, what are the chances these of the four defensive players contributing to the team this season? I think likely, man. I mean, I guess Rook may not be much of, and I know it sounds weird. Rook is your second round pick, and he's probably the least. But to me,
Troy Anderson, Richie Grant, they've got a history of kind of sitting these guys for a year there.
Yeah. I mean, so. I mean, Edge, you know, the Edge, there's a need there clearly. So, I mean, I can see Braylon getting on the field more. I can see Dorless getting on the field more there just by need alone. You know, Rook, like I said, I think he'll contribute. I don't know if it'll be maybe later on in the season. And then Bertrand, like you said, I think Bertrand can definitely contribute depending on how, you know, this training camp goes. So yeah, I think it's definitely an option. Gabriel said, I still think we should have gotten a receiver earlier. Yeah, I mean, I thought as deep as that class was, they could have snagged somebody earlier, but you know, I'm not going to complain with the
agree. When did Ladd go? He went before the Falcons.
Yeah. That's who we really wanted. That's who I really wanted with the second round.
Same. I was kind of turning it into a bit, but yeah, I would have died. Yeah. If we
did one draft video for this thing we did with some other content creators. And, that was our guy. I went in on Ladd about why they should take Ladd with 43, if he was still there, but yeah. MacTown, what's up, buddy? Billy Mills, what's cracking? He said, what's up with it? John, that Dorless pick will be him. Mark my words. Hey, I'm all about it. I am all about it. And they said, I feel another move coming in free agency. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, you know, I'm sure you've talked about it too, Will, with, you know, I wouldn't shock me if an Akilah Weatherspoon or something like that came around and they added to that cornerback room. I mean, I know with the zone scheme that they run, it's going to be a little bit better for Clark Phillips to kind of, you know, he's definitely performs better in those type of schemes than he does in man, like he did last year, yep. You know, with what Ryan Nielsen ran. So that'll be, I don't know how exactly they feel about him starting on the outside, but they do have Antonio Hamilton too, if they think he's good enough to, just in case Clark's not the guy. I don't know. But I can definitely see them adding to the corner room, just, you know, if they choose to.
The thing I could potentially see is a trade. Like again, I know that Akilah Weatherspoon, like some of these guys, and we'll get to I think the Kevin King comment here in a second, maybe that works as well. But if they're going to make a move again, like they've got a lot of bodies now on the defensive kind of front, maybe there's something there where you could go get a piece that has a slightly lower contract hit than the guy you're trading away, which could be a bigger name. I'm just speculating here, but we know that Terry Fontenot has been creative with his pro acquisition in the past. So I don't think anything is off the table. It's tough to look at just a pure free agent acquisition, given that they've got a little bit less than $7 million in cap space right now, it looks like. So
yeah, they got to do some restructuring.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the AJ Terrell fifth year, like if they extend him, that's a very easy, I think, option to free up some money in the short term. But yeah, I do think they're going to add somebody.
Yeah, me too. And Dave, so do you think this QB thing became a thing and became a thing because there is nothing in the NFL? I mean, hey, if it works out, it's going to become a thing. It's going to be a, everybody's going to be trying to sign the very next guy as their quarterback gets older in the league. If that's best case scenario for us. Then one time, said Kirk has that Matt Ryan personality, potentially will be good with Kirk in the building. Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Dave said, well, do you think the Falcons will be heavy zones? Yeah, basically, yeah. So essentially what Raheem ran was a heavy zone. I mean, you're talking like 70% of the time he was running some type of zone, cloud, cover six, you name it. Like that's kind of that what you can expect. So yeah, that benefits Clark. It kind of benefits Richie too, to be honest, which, shout out to Daniel Flick. You know, he wrote an article about Raheem basically telling Richie that he was wrong. You know, that when his first initial reaction to Richie Grant was probably not great, but then he watched film and he was like, hey, you did some really good things. Will, I've been I was Richie Grant's like fan club president for a long time, and I had to jump off last year. Like, I had to just call it a day because I, you know, about three quarters of the season, I couldn't do it anymore. But it looks like he's gonna get another shot. So, what do you say about that?
I mean, I think I'm for that because I do think that in the Ryan Nielsen defense, it is very like, you know, we're up in the grill of the receiver's face, and it is do or die for the corners. And I think you saw the Falcons get more. Yeah, they had their best like season of sack totals for since like 2012. It was crazy, like the actual number and how long it's been since they had really reached that total. But that in part was due to the secondary. It was a real complement of the back end and the front end because they were getting up and jamming these receivers and running and sticking right in their hip pocket. But that also comes with a big risk, especially if you are a safety, right? Because when you get burned, you're getting burned for touchdowns. You're getting burned for big explosives. And I mean, we even saw with AJ Terrell, and we all know how good AJ Terrell is, but like that Mike Evans touchdown against down in Tampa Bay is a prime example of like AJ Terrell was kind of right there, man on man. And Mike Evans makes just one better move. And that's the difference. And that's where I think Richie Grant had a big learning curve and an adjustment that he just didn't excel in. So I think that if you are envisioning him just like Clark Phillips in more of a zone defense that is probably more based and geared on limiting those explosives by scheme design, that is going to help a player like Richie Grant. And we are probably going to see far less of those just like, where did that come from? Where was Richie Grant? Oh, he fell down. Oh, he was three steps behind the receiver because he's not going to be on that island like he was this past year. So again, I think given the other needs that this team had this offseason, you didn't necessarily need to create a hole when you still have one more year of his rookie contract to work with. And he has done some good things. I'm all for him getting another bite at the apple.
I think he was one of four guys last year that was over 100 tackles on our defense. You know, I mean, he's played a lot of minutes.
He's got a lot of experience out there.
Yeah. And like I said, I just, you know, it was like every weekend it was a new tight end that was, you know, taking him to school. And I was like, all right, I'm good. You know, but it was, you know, like you said, I mean, the scheme did not help him at all as far as that goes.
You're going to get exposed.
That's not his strength. You know, he's definitely more of a box type of guy. He's comfortable in the box, that type of thing. So if you're going to leave him on an island, especially against someone more athletic tight end or wide receiver, you know, not good things may end up happening. So, George Gatboy, what's up, buddy? Said, go back to Coach Ra's introductory press conference. He said the next QB fit will be a team's fans and the city. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm sure they've known about that. They're going to do this for a while. This is, I don't think this just happened in the last week or two. I'm sure they've had it, on their mind. Daryl said, love this discussion. Most balanced discussion on the draft I've heard. Hey, appreciate you, man. We try to keep it balanced and, you know, try to, not to go too overboard with our emotions with it. And then here you go. Yeah, boy, so what's your thoughts on Kevin King, possible CB2? What do you think? If it's, you think there would be Clark Phillips, Hamilton, King, who do you think that would be the most?
Yeah, I think he's fitting? He's the player version of what we were just talking about with Richie Grant. It's like it's a very high risk, high reward. So it's the injury history, right? But he was a high draft, like he was a second round pick, but he was the number 33 pick. So like he was a fringe first round player. And, you know, he had kind of his ups and downs in Green Bay before the injuries, but he sat out. It's one of those where he is talented. He's far enough removed from, I think, the injury where you hope that he is able to hit the ground running. But we saw kind of Jeff Okuda. There was the gamble last year. He gets dinged up in training camp, and ultimately that injury kind of nagged him, I think, throughout the year, and it wasn't what we had hoped this time last year. So the same thing could maybe happen with Kevin King, which is why I think Clark Phillips, like, he's got to go out and earn it. But for sure, we saw last training camp, Marco Hellams making plays, kind of rising up the depth chart there. D. Alford, same thing, rising up the depth chart. The secondary is a spot where you can get some of these guys who you don't really know much about, who just, they come out and ball, and in the right scheme with the right coaching, the right mentality, it would not shock me if Kevin King comes in and does make some plays. Again, he's got familiarity with Jerry Gray. So he is not somebody to be discounted for sure.
Yeah, I agree. DJ, what's going on, buddy? Good to see you, man. Crispy said, I think Rook, Trice, and Dorlos will make huge impacts year one. Love Trice in particular. His motor alone is that of an alpha edge rusher. Yeah, you're not kidding. And if you watch anything on Trice, it's like he doesn't stop. I mean, if he fails with his first move, he's going to try a second. He's going to try a third. He's going to keep going. Like, that's you love to see that from your edges for sure. Like,
and he seems like – sorry, continue.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Well, he seems like an A-plus, like, human being too. Like, exactly. To read about – reading – Dane Brugler's The Beast over at The Athletic, like, he's taken mission trips. He's like wanted to go to Washington for the academic rigor. Like, he is just constantly looking for ways to better himself in all aspects of his life, which I love. Like, he's bringing it on the football field. He plays with that motor. I think the reason he dropped has more to do with just the maxing out maybe of his physical gifts. Compared to what the NFL level is, and NFL teams love to bet on traits, and Braylon Trice probably is like filled out. He is what he is. However, a lot of guys can make it on just pure hustle and effort. And it's not like he's a bad athlete in any way, shape, or form. So I like the Braylon Trice pick a lot. And I think from day one, he probably, if I was going to make a bet of like anybody in this class who week one like hits the ground running, it would be Braylon Trice.
Yeah, I mean, he can legitimately be a three down type of edge rusher, like, because he can set the edge, but he plays the run great, and he can get after the pass rusher. So yeah, he's one of those guys that complement Lorenzo Carter very well, especially if Lorenzo is going to be starting opposite of him. So you know, NASA Jamal Anderson confirmed. I can't wait. I hope they bring back some reds. I mean, I don't know what your favorite jersey is, Will, but like, I'll be cool with seeing the red come back.
I like the reds. It's interesting. I was working for the team when they rolled out the last jerseys, or they get the current jerseys. That was an interesting moment. You know, I seeing the gradients for the first time was.
Were you a fan of the gradients or not?
It was a little bit like the Michael Penix pick. Right? I was kind of okay. Well, that's not what I was expecting.
I didn't like the my son got a CP gradient, and actually looked a lot better in person than it did like when I saw it on.
See, that's what like it grew on me, right? The more that I saw them, and when they brought in the mocks and did all that stuff, and I liked some of the like lettering and the helmets and all of that were cool, right? But yeah, when they in your mind, because we know how the classic jerseys look, and the old logo. And I love the current iteration of the alternate, like the throwback alternate.
Yes.
But just make that the regular jersey, right? Everybody go check out what John retweeted right before we hopped on. Those jerseys look great. You know, like it's not hard.
All three of them.
Yeah, it's not hard to mock up a Falcons jersey because the color design and the scheme is awesome and it's excellent. Let's not get too cute here. Like just go with what works.
100%. And a few more comments. Gabriel, I think we're getting Kelly Witherspoon. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Mike Towns said, how good do you think Mooney can really be? I really like Darnell Mooney, man. Like he had a couple of different offensive coordinators in Chicago. He did really well under one, not so well in another. Had an injury crop up. Justin, again, you say what you want about Justin Fields, like not the best of passers getting him the ball. So, but as far as I mean, a dude that can just flat out fly, 4.3 speed, great hands, fantastic route runner. I watched quite a bit on him after we signed him, and I think he's going to be a stud with somebody, actually guys that can throw the ball to him. So, I mean, I think, what would you think, Will?
You know, it's interesting. I reached out to a friend of mine who covers the Bears after they made that acquisition, and he said that after Mooney's injury, you noticed a little bit of a lack of that burst that he had beforehand. However, like that's to be understood, right? I think we all noticed that with Kyle Pitts last year. Hope is that a couple of years removed, that starts to come back. And I think that kind of when it did start coming back for Darnell Mooney coincided with the Bears acquiring DJ Moore. And then it was very clear that Justin Fields was like, DJ Moore is a god. I'm just going to keep throwing it to this guy. Yeah. And Darnell Mooney suffered a little bit. But when things were clicking early in his career, you saw the potential. You saw the potential to be a 1,000-yard receiver, to be, you know, maybe he's not going to be that alpha, but he could certainly be a high-caliber number two. And I think that's the bet here in Atlanta. So I like in a scheme that should hopefully create a lot of open looks for these guys. And again, you've got a quarterback who should be able to deliver the ball in the right spot on time in stride. There's a lot of potential for a player like Mooney to be a bit of an ascendant and breakout, even though he's kind of already broken out that 1 year, to be a comeback breakout type of player.
Yeah, agreed, man. Agreed. Tyler said, man, I'm just excited to see Bijan get passes that actually hit him in stride. That, and that goes for everybody, for the receivers included.
Frankly, I loved the behind-the-back basketball catches, so I'm sad to see those go.
They took the catch radius as a like literal thing. Like, we can literally throw it behind them. They're going to catch it.
Those were amazing, man.
Oh, they really were. And, you know, this, imagine the Oregon Duck like jerseys with the wings on the shoulder pads. That actually might be kind of cool. I could have to see a mock-up, but I think that might be kind of cool. You never see Mean Red Machine said, bring back all black. Don't matter the logo, new or old. I'm a fan of the all black too. I did like that. And there also Darnell was taking passes from a kick turn. Did you see that they, I don't know if it was for real or not, but the Justin may return punts.
I didn't see that. No.
Yeah. There was a thing on Twitter. I just happened to see it. It said Justin Fields possibly returning punts in Pittsburgh. Or kicks, something like that, or kicks. I don't even know if it was kick returner or punt returner, but like.
So he's not going to be the starting quarterback, is what they're saying.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's what somebody, that means.
Somebody commented like, "Oh damn, Arthur's already in his bag for the season even started." But
man, I really liked Pittsburgh's draft too.
I did too.
Roman Wilson too. Going to Pittsburgh, that hurt me.
Yeah. And the Eagles, man, the Eagles just seem to just sit around and get the guy, people that they want every year. And it's just like just disgusting. But yeah. We'll close it there, man. And basically, in summary, guys, like I was pissed on Thursday, a little less pissed on Friday. And now I'm totally fine with it. It just took a while. I mean, I was probably fine with it, you know, by Sunday. But, you know, like I said, it just, we not knowing what Michael's going to be. You know, when he takes the field, you know, we can say here now we're pretty comfortable with the QB position for the next, and like they said, 5 to 10 years, you know, or more. You know, there's a chance he gets on the field and sucks, but hopefully that's not it. And that's any player though, guys. We could have took a Dallas Turner at 8. He may suck. He may be a bust. You know, like all these, like there's no guarantee of any player that's going to just transition, and like it's all a risk. You know, so if they, like I said, like we talked about earlier, if they looked at it and say, you know what, we believe this is a franchise QB. If they truly believe that, then you have to take him. You have to take him because it is the most important player on the field And so that guy is more important than your edge rusher, than your corner, than whoever else you want to talk about taking. That guy is the most important. And the fact that the draft is deep with D tackles and edges and stuff that we needed, which we went and got, and they are good, solid players. I think they're going to be contributors. You know, I was totally fine with it after that, you know. So all in all, like I said, guys, don't be too down. If you are down, don't worry about it. It's only May. The guys haven't took the field yet. So give them a chance to get on the field, see what they can do. And then hopefully by September, you'll be feeling a lot better when you see in the offense move like it should be, the defense out there stopping and getting after the quarterback like we hope they can do. But yeah, Will, any final thoughts on it?
No, I completely agree. I think, again, after the end of the Matt Ryan era, they had a little bit of a second chance at this, bringing in somebody of a similar caliber with Kirk Cousins, and they didn't want to leave any chance. You know, when you can control kind of your destiny, I think they took that very seriously, said we may not and we hope not to be in this position again. If other teams are going to need quarterbacks in a weaker class, then by all accounts, what this one was, it's going to be much harder. It's going to be more obvious what we're trying to do. Therefore, the price is going to be a lot higher. So again, spending one asset to potentially secure that future is awesome. I think they made what was the best move for right now and what they feel is the best move for the future. He's got to pan out, but if he does, I think a lot of people will be looking back at this class in 5 years, 10 years as like, wow, they thought outside of the box, but it worked out for him.
100%. And Dave said, I can see the NFL taking a third, fifth round pick from us Falcons. It's possible. We still don't even know what that's going to be. You know, I mean, that they brought that up too, if that possibly being part of their thought process. Which honestly, I don't think it was. I think it was really like, this is the guy we think is the dude. You know, we're gonna take him. You know, and Dixon, what's up, Larry? He said, F the experts hating on our Falcons. They're still hating after them. Hey, they're going to be. That's just normal for Falcons fans, man. And we did, I should say, we didn't mention it, but we did sign 10 undrafted free agents that I absolutely know nothing about. But if you want to learn something about them, Savion Mixon, who if y'all watch the show, you know, is on the show with us quite a bit. He had a great thread on Twitter. If I can find it, I'll put it in the link in the video. But he actually it's in depth about each one of those undrafted free agents, if you want to check it out. It's really good stuff. And, yeah. So, Will, what do you have coming up on the podcast and anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Oh, I need to figure out what I'm going to do next on the pod. It's been so busy the last couple of weeks that honestly, I may take like a little bit of a breather and take a step back next week. But I did just record an episode with Sam Monson, who is the lead NFL analyst over at Pro Football Focus. He had a lot of great insight on the draft class, but also we kind of talked about Zach Robinson, who spent a year or so over at Pro Football Focus working directly with them as kind of a quarterback expert. And he was very high on Patrick Mahomes at a time, you know, when we didn't know he was going to be Patrick Mahomes. So if that means anything to you, Sam has a lot more information on just what makes Zach Robinson such an interesting offensive coordinator and why he believes he is destined for big things. And then I also spoke with Ross Tucker about the draft. I had a draft recap with Ovi Mahaley, my co-host, who called the Michael Penix pick. He doesn't have a crystal ball or anything. He just thought that it made a lot of sense for the backup quarterback position and also the future. So go check all that stuff out. My written work can be found over at The Falcoholic, and you can follow me on Twitter at Will McFadden. So yeah, this was a lot of fun, John. I really appreciate you having me on. This was an excellent conversation.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for joining me, man. Yeah. Especially like I said, with Mike being out, we'll have to get you back on. He's here. And, but yeah, we both needed it. Like you said, the more you talk it out, the more it makes sense, the more you like it, the more you feel good about it. So I think that worked out, but,
It's cathartic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like Will said, make sure y'all check out the show. I just watched it earlier, actually, the one with Sam from PFF, a really, really good show. So make sure y'all check that out and check out the Believe in Falcons podcast on everything you listen to and on YouTube. Make sure you like, subscribe, just like you do for us. We much appreciate it. And we'll be back next week, guys. Mike, we'll be back in town on Sunday. I'm not sure exactly what day we're going to go live. Probably, I don't even know, but we'll yeah, just keep between baseball and our schedules, man, it's all over the place right now. So, my son's birthday is Monday. It's definitely not gonna be Monday. So it'll probably be Tuesday or Thursday. So just keep your eye on the channel and, or on social media. You can follow us at Out of Your Effing Mind on Twitter. You can follow Mike mostly on TikTok on Out of Your Falcon Mind. You can email us at atlfalconfancast@gmail.com if you want to send us any comments or questions or long form email. We've had a few of those. It's been really cool. We appreciate that. And if you want merch, like the hoodie you can almost see that I'm wearing, you can go to bonfire.com/store, Out of Your Falcon Mind. You can find the hoodies and t-shirts and stuff like that there. So again, Will, thanks so much, dude. I appreciate you coming through here in a kind of a short notice with Mike being gone, but it's been a great conversation, and we will have you back on sooner than later, man.
Yeah, of course. Anytime, buddy.
All right, man. We all have a great evening, night, and we will catch y'all next week. Much love.